If you've ever flown into Denver, you know it takes a few days to get acclimated to that city's mile-high altitude. Well, imagine being a soldier parachuting into a high-altitude battleground. With no time to get acclimated, you might need to go on to the march and face the enemy right away. The Defense Department has a comprehensive program to understand and overcome altitude sickness. Joining us to explain is Dr. Stephen Muzza of the Army's Research Institute of Environmental Medicine. Dr. Muzza, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tom.
So tell us how extensive this problem is for Afghanistan and anywhere else we might be deployed.
Well, as you point out correctly, you fly into any elevation much above 4,000, 5,000 feet, and the lack of oxygen due to the reduction in barometric pressure impairs both physical performance, particularly at those modest altitudes. But as you go up above 7,000 or 8,000 feet, you get into the area where altitude sickness, most commonly acute mountain sickness, can develop. And in Afghanistan, a large portion of the country, particularly in the eastern half of the country along the Pakistani border and the northeast sections, are at moderate to very high altitudes. In fact, the operations in Afghanistan are really the first high-altitude operations that the U.S. military has engaged in since the end of World War II.
Wow. So, in other words, you're kind of creating a body of thought or a body of research now that may not have existed.
Well, you know, for most of the post-World War II period, it is true that the U.S. did not consider engagements at high altitude to be a fairly high-risk adventure. And, of course, there are other countries that have, as we're familiar with both Pakistan, India, and China and their issues. There are a number of our allies who have high-altitude borders, and therefore they need to protect and maintain security, particularly through Central Asia and in South America. So our program has actually been in existence since the late 1960s as one of the environments that we study here at USARium. And certainly in the last 8 to 9 years, it has had a greater emphasis.
So what does your work primarily consist of, learning more about the how the syndrome works or trying to find ways to mitigate it for soldiers?
Well, basically, we have four major goals of our program. The first is to simply model the risk of high altitude. A lot of people really aren't that familiar with it, as you point out, and you know it's not something that most U.S. military bases experience here in the United States. If you think about it, virtually all basic training and even our forces bases in the U.S. are at low altitude. So our troops, Marines, soldiers, airmen are all training and at low altitude. And so in order to give them a better understanding and reduce the mystery, shall we say, of altitude, we've been working on developing models of altitude sickness, work performance, and acclimatization. Once we know what the risk is, we've then also been working on developing effective and efficient acclimatization strategies. You know, basically, as you pointed out, you arrive in Denver and you need 1 to 2 days or more before you start to feel like you can get on your feet, maybe go out for a jog or something. So we've been trying to identify what are the most effective and optimal strategies for altitude acclimatization. Our third area of work is to increase our understanding of the physiological basis for altitude sickness and acclimatization. And this is where some of the work that was recently in the press from the University of Colorado, but also other academic universities, we're working in conjunction with investigators at Mass General Hospital here in the Boston metro area. And our own work has been to identify and elucidate the molecular mechanisms of altitude. So that our fourth goal, then, is to identify biomarkers and objective assessment of individual susceptibility. And eventually, if we can target receptors within the body, we may be able to identify and develop pharmacological products that could actually induce altitude acclimatization without having to go to altitude and prevent altitude sickness.
We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Muzza. He is a research physiologist and mountain medicine team leader in Thermal Mountain Medicine Division of the U.S. Army Research Institute of Environmental Medicine. And just briefly tell us, what are the effects of altitude sickness?
Well, the altitude sickness, and the most common altitude sickness, is referred to as acute mountain sickness, or AMS. It's primarily a headache, fatigue, lightheadedness, dizziness. In its more severe form, you develop nausea and vomiting. It also has very disruptive to your sleep, so a person trying to sleep the first night at altitude may find themselves having a fitful night of sleep. And overall, it just creates this melee. So you just don't feel comfortable. If you're familiar with a hangover or a bad case of the flu, it could sort of feel like that. In its most serious form, it can actually be debilitating to where the headache and the nausea is so severe that you have disruptions in your fluid and electrolyte balance, and you require a medical evacuation from high altitude. And there have been, we have data that indicates that in the spring of 2002, during Operation Anaconda, one of the forward surgical teams treated about 14% of the cases they treated were due to severe acute mountain sickness from the combat operations. The two other much more rare but potentially fatal altitude sicknesses are high altitude pulmonary edema, which of course is a fluid buildup in the lungs, and high altitude cerebral edema. Those two severe forms of altitude sickness are luckily extremely rare. We have no reported cases of HAPE or HACE, as they're referred to, actually causing fatalities within the U.S. military, but they are the two leading causes of fatalities at high altitude among, I would say, the recreational, trekking, and climbing community.
This sounds like it could be a strategic issue for the military in Afghanistan. So how are they dealing with it now? Is it something where they can let newly arriving soldiers just take a couple of weeks to get acclimated before they hit combat, or how do we deal with it?
Well, it's really up to the individual unit commander. We provide guidance. We've published technical medicine bulletins recently that brings together all the state-of-the-art knowledge, the climatization strategies, risk assessment, what drugs are available to use. But primarily, what we've seen is in the larger military units, the Marines, the Army, and such, they tend to deploy to and work out of these forward operating bases. And the forward operating bases are located probably for tactical reasons, but but from a physiological perspective, they're located in the 5,000-7,000 foot elevation range. And that's a very good altitude to acclimatize to. That'd be like going to Fort Carson or Colorado Springs, and such. And at those elevations, our work has indicated that you, after just a week or so, you gain very effective altitude acclimatization, and subsequently you can go out on patrol or activities up to 10, 11, 12,000 feet with relatively minimal impact with regard to altitude sickness. Although I will emphasize that the physical performance is improved somewhat with acclimatization, but it never comes back to your baseline condition. So the FOBs that are out there at 6, 7, 8,000 feet are an effective way to acclimatize.